So hello everybody, welcome. This is Sab here, Sab in Paris, except I'm not in Paris. I would say with from Paris with love, but in fact I'm not in Paris, I'm somewhere else. It could remain a secret, but I'll give you a clue. It begins with P and it ends in L, and it's a little bit south of here. So for reasons best kept to myself, I am not at home. But let's say that I'm coming from Paris anyway, in my heart. Paris is in my heart, or I'm in the heart of Paris, one way or the other. So this is the Infinity Cafe, Infinity Chat Cafe, and we're going to spend an hour talking about stuff. If it's just me, I'll talk to myself, and if it's other people, I'll talk to you, and hopefully you'll talk to me. And it doesn't matter either way. We'll do what happens. That's one of the main things that I like here, is that you have no idea what's going to happen, and you go with the flow, man, and it's always good. So this is how it works. I present a topic, and then we talk about it. Then I present another topic and we talk about it. It could be me just talking if it's just me, or we can get a conversation going if you feel so inclined. So you can just listen, no problem, or you can join in. I'll start you all off on mute. And when you want to join in, you can either raise your hand. I think there might be a system for raising your hand on the participants button. And we'll do it like that. So, we also drink coffee, and this is coffee, and we eat croissant. This is a very nice croissant, I think you'll agree. There we are. And the agenda for today, if you will, I'm going to share my screen with, and it's a Facebook page, which shows you the agenda. Here we go. So I hope you can see that. If not, I'll read it. So the potential subjects for today are my creative week, a great disappointment avoided, and a new Facebook page, which we are on. So that's exciting for me. Number two, Paris as a metaphor. This is a regular feature, and today's metaphor is street photography as a metaphor for life or a certain approach to life. Part three, personal selection, three heavy articles. This comes from what I've created this week, and I've chosen three articles or photographs to discuss with you. And we can chat about that if you like. Number four, discoveries. This is generally things that I've read or come across which have interested me. And the final thing, quirks and curios. Well, this could be who knows what. Don't even know yet. So coming back to me, let me just tell you. I was going to tell you about me, but not really. I'm going to tell you about my presentation of me. I could tell you what I am. A lot of people tell you what they are. They say, I am a this, I am a that. And it's very often attached to qualifications that they've taken. I am a psychologist, I am a teacher, I am a photographer, I am a coach, whatever it's, you know, this sort of thing. And I even did, or started doing, a coaching qualification. And someone who ran the course had actually written a book along the lines of, don't do coaching, be a coach. In that it's supposed to be deeply within you. It's part of what you are, as opposed to just, right, now I'm going to do coaching and then I'm going to do something else. This person's idea was you have to be to the depth of your being a coach, and then it's everything you do. So I thought, cool, that's really good. But then I started thinking, yeah, but then again, I'm not sure if it is, or at least not always, because a lot of people will try to convince you that they are certain things. But that doesn't mean they are. It's very often their definition of what they are, or it's even what they would actually like to be, or like you to think that they are, or rather like you to think that they do. So what I've decided to do from time to time is to tell you what I do, and then you can decide what I am. So if I say to you, well, I took 300 photographs of Paris this week, you might say to yourself, wow, he must be a really keen Paris street photographer. But I could tell you that I'm a really keen Paris street photographer, but not actually have taken any photographs this week. So that's my little, I don't know what that's about, but it's just me saying, this is what I've done this week. And I'm going to talk about a couple of things that I've done this week. at the end of last week, on last week's call, I said to you that I was very excited because in the space of 10 days, I had gone from no plans whatsoever on the sort of coaching, accompanying kids with learning difficulties front to almost having my own cabinet in a medical center. And I thought, you know, this was just me going somewhere, getting off my backside, doing something, meeting people, talking to them, exchanging. And I almost had a cabinet in a medical center with my name on about four plaques all around the place. And I told you this, and I said I was really excited, and it all came from doing one little action, one thing leading to another, being open to possibilities, and there we are. But in the back of my mind, I was still saying to myself, well, if all that can happen in 10 days, nothing has actually happened yet. So maybe in 10 minutes, it could all fall through. So I'd kind of prepared myself. So sure enough, a while after last week's Infinity Cafe call, this, in other words, I got the call. And the call was, look, I'm sorry, but what had happened was one of the doctors they were waiting for to come and take one of the other rooms had expected my little place to be free for him to have his coffee and relax. So they said, well, it might not happen after all. So I'm waiting, but it probably won't happen. But it didn't hit me as much as I thought it would have, because this would have been a great opportunity. But then again, the way I'm starting to look at things is everything is an opportunity. Every minute is an opportunity. There isn't one right thing you should be doing and one wrong thing, or one good thing and one bad thing. It's that you're doing something at a given point in time. And if you're not doing that, you're doing something else. The thing is to consider everything you're doing as the right thing. Then you're never disappointed. So that's what I did. I thought, well, fair enough. Well, if that's not going to happen, that means something else is. And maybe that something else would be better. And then I could easily say, well, if I'd got this cabinet, I'd have had to be present all the weeks and not be so free and maybe have clients that were a real pain and all the rest of it. So it's good to be flexible. And it's good, I think, not to think this thing will be the thing that changes my life. And if that doesn't happen, my life will be even worse than before, not even just the same. That's my little story from this week. And my other little story is my new Facebook and website initiative. So I'm forging ahead in the coaching sphere because I absolutely love it. It's such a joy talking to people about their lives, where they're going, where they see themselves today, and helping them see more clearly. So that's definitely a sort of calling, I think, for me. So I did two things this week. I continued working on my new website, which is called infinitycoaching.biz. And I created the Facebook page to go with it. And I'll show it to you now. I'm just going to share the screen with you. So this is my Facebook page. It looks like this, Infinity Coaching. Plus fun, free weekly webinars in English and French. And that's me, folks. That's what we're doing now. I intend for these to be very regular, hopefully more or less weekly. And of course, we're starting now. It's just me. That's normal. And little by little, people will join in. They'll get to know about them and they'll realize it's a really interesting, fun, safe place to be. I'll be presenting different subjects each week, several different subjects each hour. And after each topic, each little point that I'm making, each little insight I've had, I will open it up to everybody and say, who's got comments on that? What does that stir in you? Any opinions and so on? And what about you? You know, compare what's happening in your life with what I'm talking about. So the Facebook page, I'm hoping to really get this going because I've been a bit lost, you know, in all my Facebook pages. I'm a bit of a crazy inventor. Whenever I have a new idea, I go full speed ahead on that, leave the rest behind, and then I get a new idea and the process goes over and over. So this time I'm hoping that this one, which I'm very excited about, Infinity Coaching, will be a nice, lively Facebook page where I can regularly share stuff, maybe daily, have the webinars weekly in French and in English. I've just done the one in French, and hopefully get some really nice conversations going. Webinars are free, of course. And I created the Facebook page, the website to go with it, which looks like this. That's the page where you can get direct links to the webinars just before them, or a few days before you can sign up so that I have an idea of who's coming. So the next two are already available if you want to sign up for those and get the link. And Infinity Coaching itself, if I click on this, I'm still developing the website. It looks like this. Welcome to Infinity Coaching. Let's explore your limitless potential. start your adventure now. It may or may not be difficult to read, but never mind. Transformative coaching with Seb. There we are, with my Paris photos, of course, and coaching services and various things like that. So that's my current project. I would invite you to chip in there, but as it's just me, I'll move on to Paris as a metaphor. Here it is. French is above. This is English. Paris is a metaphor, street photography. And I'm going to talk to you about my street photography. And then later on in part three, I'm going to show you my street photography. First of all, let me talk about it. So why is street photography a metaphor for life? Well, I have taken photographs of Paris for many years now. I've been in Paris for 25 years, and I was into photography heavily before I came to Paris. So that gives you an idea. And there's been some years where I've been heavily photographing Paris in various circumstances, and other times when I've laid off for various reasons. And right now, at the beginning of this year, I decided to really go for it and to wrap as much creativity as I possibly could into one package, because the danger is going in all directions with writing, photography, poetry, painting. And I really was dispersing my energies and not really getting anywhere fast. So I took on a new program, and I decided, okay, this year from January 1st, I'm going to publish a photograph, a square, that's one of my things, squares, a square photograph, creative, arty photograph of Paris. And I'm going to have two versions, just the photo and a version with text on top, the text being a small article of around 100 words, sometimes a little bit more. And that's going to be my creative input for this, from now, from the 1st of January going forward, and we'll see what happens. So I did. And most things I drop after a while, although I must admit, in the past, I did manage to publish 1,000 photographs daily in a row with the small article. Not in the current style, but I did manage that. And that had proved to me something great. And I also had another thing that proved to me something is when I decided to lose a bit of weight. And so these things are great to put in motion, because if you manage to do them, they prove to you that, for one thing, it's possible, and second, it was important to you, because I'm not sure you can do it if it's not important. And the proof is I'm now on number 291 or 293, just published today, and it is day 293 of the year. So I've kept at it, and I've even upped the ante a bit by creating a new thing, which is memes based on the same image. Meme is that thing where you have the image, normally often it's a pretty image with some supposedly meaningful quote on top, and you slap it around people's Facebook pages. Well, I got sick of receiving these things, especially when they weren't written by the person who was sending them. And I decided, well, they're cool though, but I just don't like it when it's just, you know, just someone posts it, and what are they expecting? It's not theirs. They're not making a comment with it. What's the point? So I thought, well, I'll do it, but it'll be my images and it'll be my words. Wise or not wise, who cares? It doesn't matter. At least it's me creating. So I did. So now, although the memes are a bit less regular, the thing which is absolutely daily is the photo, and then the photo with the text. Inspired by the photo or inspired by life, I have no idea what the text is going to be before I start. And it's fun like that. And also, because it's a daily thing, I get a satisfaction, a sort of shoot, a boost of satisfaction after every time I publish it, which is daily. And I need that to create. I need immediate feedback. My creative process is learn, create, share. And it has been for a while now. It's a motto which I invented for myself, and it's still with me. So that must mean that it's pretty cool, at least for me. It's actually not a linear thing. It's not learn, create, share, stop. No, it's like this. Learn, create, share, learn, create, share, learn, create, share, learn, create, share. And it goes on forever. And the reason why this is a powerful thing for me is because it involves me, but it also involves other people. I learn from everything I absorb, everybody's input, including my own, the things I do and the reactions I get to that teaches me things. Other people's efforts teach me things. And these go together with what's already in my head, what I experience of the world, what I have experienced, to make me create something. You know, you create something. It doesn't come from nowhere. It seems to, but it must come from some sort of influence. So I create. But for me, the creative process isn't finished until I share. I create something. It leaves me like a child leaving its parents, and it lands somewhere else. It leaves me, and before it's reached somebody else, but once it's left me, it's in the form of whatever I've created. It could be a poem, it could be an article, it could be a painting, it could be a photograph. If I were a singer, it could be a song, and you get the idea. But for me, the process isn't finished until it's landed in someone else's awareness. So when it does that, someone else will take it in. And this is a form of learning. They learn from what someone else has done or said. And this will then inspire them to create something, hopefully. And then hopefully, if they are of my ilk, they will not feel that it's complete until they've shared it. And when they share it, well, it might come back to, it'll go out to other people and they'll get reactions. It might come back to me, for all I know. If I've inspired them, their creation might come back to me, which is a nice sort of double circle, isn't it? Maybe a sort of almost an infinity shape like that. And the process goes on. So why am I telling you all this? Because that is my street photography. Yeah, so have I actually told you why street photography is a metaphor? No, that's typical of me, isn't it? Go off on some ramble and there we are. Half an hour later, I realized that I haven't actually told you what I meant to. So here it is. Street photography, I go out. I walk and I wait and see what happens. I let the city speak to me. And I've always done it that way. Occasionally, I have something I specifically know about and want to photograph. Someone has told me about something. I've seen an article of a new sculpture. That's possible. Or I might have a theme in my head. Sometimes in the past, I've tried to photograph all the multicolored Wallace fountains of Paris, or all the animal statues, or all the strange plaques that are sort of hidden from general view, or people just walk over them, but they don't realize that there's a story behind. So that's one cool thing. But most often, and even if I'm doing that, I still wander, open-minded, open-eyed, waiting for Paris to speak to me. And it does, always. And I get into this sort of strange mode. This, the artists will call it in the zone. And you're just open and ideas flood in, and you forget time, you forget everything, and ideas flood in. This is what happens with Paris and me. I get to the point where I can't stop seeing images I want to capture. And it almost gets irritating, because as soon as I put my phone back in my pocket, that's almost a signal for a new image to come along. And it's fun. And I go home and I realize that a lot of amazing images have come to me from somewhere, from Paris, from me, from my mind, merging with the city. And it's a great way to do things. So why is that like life? Because I'm writing a book about Paris as a metaphor for life, but it's actually lots of different little incidents linked to Paris for me. Of course, you can do this in your own city. For me, this walking around Paris, just letting Paris speak to me, is a bit like life. You could go through life planning everything, trying to plan everything. You know, today I do this, tomorrow we do this, we have to be there at that time, and so on. But what about if you just went and saw what life had planned for you today? What if you just went out there with nothing on? I mean, okay, that's another approach to life, isn't it? Well, I mean, nothing on your mind. I actually live in a town where up in the hills, in the wood, there is one of the biggest naturists, I think they call them, naturist nudist camps in Europe. I haven't visited it yet. And what if we just went out there with an open mind, open to what's going to happen? We don't know what's going to happen, but amazing things do happen. And if we close our mind, it's less likely that those amazing, unexpected things will happen. So I'm starting more and more to treat life this way, which kind of goes back to that thing about me thinking I had the cabinet in the medical center and then not having it. I was open to not to having the cabinet. That's why I almost got it. But I was also open to not having it and something else happening, which is why when I didn't get it, at least for the moment, that was okay too. There's that story, that metaphor. I should have researched it before telling it to you, but I didn't. But it's a story about some guy somewhere in a village where he was a farmer or something, and one day the fence broke or something after a storm, and all his beautiful horses escaped and went running off into the hills. And his friends came by and said, "Oh my goodness, what a terrible thing that is. Isn't that awful? You must feel really bad." And he said, "Maybe." And then the next day, not only did his horses come back, but they brought a whole new herd of wild horses with them. So he had twice as many wonderful horses. And then his friends saw him and said, "Oh my goodness, that's amazing. Isn't that fantastic? You must feel really great." And he said, "Maybe." And then how did it go? And then the next day, his son tried to break in some of the new horses. He was doing this, and then he fell off, and he got trampled by the horse, the son, and broke his leg very badly. And his friend said to the farmer, "Oh my goodness, that's terrible. Oh, you must really regret those horses coming back to you now." And the guy said, "Maybe." And then the next day, or whenever, the conscription people came around, because the country was at war, looking for all able-bodied men to go off and fight and probably die. And of course his son couldn't, because he had a broken leg. And his friend said, "Oh wow, that's amazing. Aren't you lucky that your friend broke his leg in the end?" And of course the man said, "Maybe." So the thing is, never, never draw conclusions. Just be open, and you don't know what'll happen. And the good things can be taken as the things that are happening. The bad things can be taken as the things that are happening. And they're all kind of rolled into one, aren't they? One leads to another. You can't appreciate the good without the bad, and so on. So there you have it. That's my Paris metaphor. We're coming up to the half hour, which is great. It's just me this time, folks. It is being recorded, I hope. So I'll be sharing this, and it'll go into the archives, the one that no one ever saw. Maybe I'll watch it back for nostalgia's sake. And the next section I want to talk to you about is my three heavy articles. Let me share the screen again, and I'm going to share with you and talk about three of the images, as it happens, that I created this week and the articles that went with them. Or was it the other way around? All right, so I'm going to share the screen again. I'm still learning this thing, this Zoom thing. It's pretty cool. It'll be even cooler when I have people watching with me. Right, so here we are. I'm going to look at this one. Three heavy articles, I call it. I didn't know what to call them. Heavy, maybe. We'll see. And here they are. So the first one is this leaf. And now let me see what's going on here. Yeah, okay. So here's this leaf for you. And you can see on the left here all the images that I'm working on. For any given image, I've, as I told you earlier, I take the image, I write an article to go with it, and it's quite an effort. You see, I even play around a lot with the layout, because although I'm trying to be artistic with my images and I try to be artistic with my words as I craft them, I also try to be artistic with the layout of the words on the image. And sometimes it can get a bit too much, to be honest, and I'm such a perfectionist. Like I did this, and then I tried another version because the tips of the leaf were getting cut off, you see, which annoyed me. So then I tried another version, but then there was another tip of the leaf getting, this tiny tip here was getting cut off. So then I finally did this version, and it takes a huge amount of time, but that's art, isn't it? And besides, when I was in the moment, I wasn't really thinking about time. Although, to be honest, I was a bit, it was taking so long. So I was just sitting in the park, and a leaf, it's autumn here, and a leaf fell on my leg, as you see it. I didn't move that leaf, it fell there like that. How beautiful, how absolutely beautiful. I could imagine it's a sign from above, couldn't I? And it came from above, that's for sure. Now my images, I play around with my images a little bit, but the colors of the leaf were gorgeous, and it inspired this little text. In the French video, the French webinar, I started to read this thing, but I realized very quickly that the poetic side of things didn't quite work because it was as much the poetic side as the profound side. I'd say it's 50-50. So let me read this to you, see what you think. A leaf fell upon my knee and proclaimed unto me in a literary key, wherefore dost thou flee as you cling to your tree? When it's time to be free, free, you'll let go, let's agree, like the busying bee or the abounding flea. They don't split twigs in three, waiting for some decree. When they're ready, they see with heartwarming glee that it's time for a life-living spree. So here is my plea, said he then, said he, little leaf on my knee as he sipped herbal tea, Shakespeare's tumbled trustee. Though there's no guarantee, I say unto thee to a massive degree, let things be. So you might have guessed what rhyming pattern I was playing with there. And the great thing is, I have no idea what is going to fall out of my head until I start. And that's what happened. You know, it's a leaf on my knee and bam, that is the result. And it took me, what, I don't know, 20 minutes, maybe half an hour. I'm not sure, actually. But it was fun. You know, it was really fun doing that. And I tried to combine, well, it's a whole thing. As I said earlier, I tried to combine a lot of stuff in one image. Otherwise, I'm just trying to do too much. So within this one image, there is the composition of the photograph. There is playing with the colors. I mean, you can't see it here, but there's someone walking behind. I mean, that's not by chance. Well, they walked by chance, but the fact that they're in my photo isn't by chance. There's the poem itself with the rhyming and the words. It's a work, you know, I worked on that. There's the layout of the black bit on the image, which goes around the leaf, but doesn't touch it. There's the profundity that I tried to place into the words. Apart from the rhyming, that's one thing. But then there's the message I'm trying to get across, which if you do read it, you'll see it's about just going with the flow. We cling to things because we're scared of letting go. But need we? Need we do that? We don't have to jump when we're not ready either, but we shouldn't cling on forever when actually it's not that dangerous to let go. So I think I need to, you know, you need to have a look at the poem and see what you take from it. But I think it was something like that. And also I tried to twist it into this metaphor of the leaf hanging onto the tree and then leaving it. Although in the leaf's case, it was leaving it to die, in inverted commas. But, well, look, the leaf landed on my knee and was born a new poem and image, which I'm now sharing with you. So you are now part of this leaf. This leaf has now given birth to something in your mind. That's kind of funny, isn't it, when you look at it like that? And we could say to ourselves that there's no beginning or end to life or anything at all. It's sort of the butterfly effect, isn't it? If you're in Australia, for example, you're listening to me now, looking at this image. Well, this leaf falling on my knee in a park in the suburbs of Paris made you think whatever you are thinking right now. And perhaps you will produce something based on what I'm saying or based on this image, something that is sparked in your mind. So nothing. So wonderful. Another image I want to share with you is this one. This is from I guess I could blow it up for you, but I hope you can see that if it's full screen. Now, this one is a statue, a work of something which I found in the Tuileries Gardens as I was walking around. And one of the great things about Paris is you can walk around Paris, especially in the big gardens, but often on streets as well, or in squares, and you find new works of art. This particular work of art got me thinking. I took a photograph, I tried to make it artistic, but then it got me thinking as well, what the, you know, why? Why did someone do this? Why is this art? What is it for? What is it supposed to represent? What are we supposed to see or feel when we see or feel it? I'll read you what I wrote, which is kind of probably more concise. Forging ahead in central Paris. Who creates these things? Monstrous images which resemble us in some vague visual way only. What are we after and what are we trying to say? Maybe we're looking for evidence of shared humanity, and something that resonates with our deeper self so as not to feel so alone. Maybe we want to smile or be touched by someone else's take on life, which echoes our own vulnerability. Or maybe it's just interesting and inspiring to see what someone's gone and done with a bunch of rocks or a bit of scrap metal. These words are proof enough that something has passed between the artist and myself through their creation, and for me, that's art. So I did a kind of a philosophical meander in my own head to try and work out what this might be for and what it did stir in me. And a bit like the leaf a couple of minutes ago, well, it stirred that for a start, stirred some thoughts. And I produce artistic stuff as well. So I'm asking the question from both sides, the receiver of somebody else's art and the producer of my own art, which I hope someone else will receive. And again, for me, it's the artist touching me indirectly and stirring thoughts. He will maybe never know what my thoughts are. Maybe one day he'll see that my image of his, I don't know, I say his or her creation, and be stirred by my words, which were inspired by his work. Who knows? Maybe he'll just imagine that he's touched some people without actually seeing evidence of that. I mean, he knows he's touched some people because his huge statue of some person is in the middle of the Tuileries Gardens in Paris. So there's that. And let me move on to my next and final image, which I warn you. Why do I warn you? Well, I warn you because it's an image which includes an image which has shocked people for 150 years, which is pretty good, isn't it? Pretty good advert for this image. You want to see it, right? So 150 years ago, this painting was painted by someone called Courbet. I'll tell you in a minute. A French artist, and put on display, and it shocked people at a salon in Paris, I think. And then it went into some private collections and wasn't seen for a long time. And it was finally put into, and let me stop this for a second, and it was finally put into a big museum called the Musée d'Orsay in Paris, a huge world-famous museum. Any kid and their family or couple or granny or whatever can go around the corner and bam, there it is, this painting in your face, if you please. Why is it so, is it a shocking painting? Well, I mean, I can only ask you and you can only decide for yourself. It looks like this. Like I said, I don't take pictures of pictures as close to lifelike as possible because for me, that's not art. So I'm an artist. I've just called myself something, whereas I shouldn't have. I should have said, I create original images. So I do not take pictures of other people's images and present them as they are, because that's not art for me. I try to change them. So here I've got a wacky angle. I've played around with the image. And of course, I've got somebody who was standing next to the image. And I've even played with him, if you have a look at it. It's funny, isn't it? I tell you, you should go there and you should stand back a bit. You can stand way back from the actual image, which is in a kind of a room, but it's open to the corridor. And you can just watch people going past because most people aren't expecting it. And they round a corner, you know, in a family, a couple, an older woman or man, and they turn their head and they see, bam, they see this staring them in the face. It's not a small picture. And it's got a huge frame. And it's funny seeing their reactions. I mean, as I say in the article that I've written to go with it, well, let me read the article to you and then I'll come back. I've got two versions of this. One is for the people who want to see what I'm talking about, and the other is for the prudes, or rather the people who would prefer. You see, she's behind there. Whereas, okay, let's go. I'll go with this one. Do some arrangements of colored pixels or combinations of brush strokes attract your attention more than others? I imagine so. The Musée d'Orsay says postcards of Courbet's L'Origine du Monde, that's the origin of the world, are its second biggest seller. Eye candy for connoisseurs? The painting has caused controversy for 150 years, but the moral justification is anything but clear. Years after the prestigious Paris Museum put it on public display for any erring school kid to experience, Facebook was penalizing pages featuring the work, censoring pixelized brushstrokes, in other words. In 2014, the performance artist Deborah De Robertis sat down before the proffered pubis and opened her legs. The resulting YouTube video was censored, even though half the population has them their pixels. She got kind of famous though. Now there's a postcard that could make number one, I reckon. So that could open up a wonderful discussion on what's shocking, is censorship worth anything, what is morality, and all the rest of it. One of the main reasons this painting shocked, apparently, because, I mean, we'd had nudes before. You know, for many years, people have been representing, like, for example, Greek or Roman statues, and there's plenty of, and Paris itself, walk around Paris, you can see breasts no end. So what is it? You know, what is so shocking about this one? Maybe it's because it's so realistic. But one of the main things was that you can't see her head or her arms. It's almost like a torso. Even her legs are chopped off high up on the thighs. So, I mean, it's really emphasizing the sexual nature of this. I mean, it's in your face. There's no getting away from it. And the question was, is it art? What's he trying to say? What's it saying about women, et cetera, et cetera. So that's one thing. Another thing is people getting upset about Facebook and YouTube censoring videos and pictures of this painting. What they're doing is getting upset about pixels representing brushstrokes, representing a human. That's about two or three steps removed from reality. And it makes you wonder, doesn't it? It makes you wonder what's going on. I'm not going to take it any further than that, and we won't have a discussion because it's just me. But that's certainly a topic for discussion at some point. Maybe I'll come back to it again when there are people present on these webinars, and we'll see what they say. We'll see what the general consensus is. Right, let me come back to... I'll come back to what? Okay, I'll come back to the Facebook page. And the next section is, as we pass the 40-minute mark, I'm doing pretty well so far. Chatting away to myself here, having a great time. The next one that is number four, discoveries. So I've got Metaphors Part 2, and I've also got a book that I discovered recently called Foutez-vous la paix, which basically means leave yourself the hell alone. And Metaphors Part 2. Now let me just move back to me. So Metaphors Part 2 is actually because last week I talked about waves on the Seine, okay, my regular feature, Paris Metaphors, and my metaphor was the waves on the Seine, which seem to be like they're separate little waves, but in fact they're just part of the Seine, they're what the Seine does, in the same way that we humans are kind of what the universe does, they're one aspect of what the universe does, which is a way of looking at things. So imagine my surprise as I bought an art magazine the other day called Psychologie de Réussir. What is it? Yeah. So it's a psychology of success, something like that. Anyway, it's interesting stuff. It's away from the science enough to be, you know, a little bit spiritual, but it's not too wacky that it's just like, what color crystal are you and all the rest of it. So it's cool. I like it. It gives me ideas and it makes me think, including, don't forget, exposing your stuff to things that you don't agree with is possibly even more valuable than things you do. So anyway, the title is Quand la vague réalise qu'elle est l'océan. And that's exactly it. When the wave realizes it is the ocean. Isn't that cool? So anyway, that was my metaphor part two. No, it wasn't. My metaphor part two, I think, was me extending it to Paris being divided into arrondissements, but in fact you can walk from one arrondissement to the next without seeing the join, whereas we like to think that we live in these separate realities, even, you know, supporting separate football teams, living in separate towns and countries, being separate people, whereas in fact we can't exist on our own. Then the other part of this was, leave yourself the hell alone, which is my translation of this book, which is called Foutez-vous la paix, leave yourself the hell alone, is what it means. And I was really excited about this, because it's these books, they sell them as really big, thick books like this, and it's about twice as big, and you pay a lot of money, and you wait a few months, and you get the small version, which has the same words, actually, and possibly the same ideas. So I happened to see this. It cost €7, and here it is. So it's one of these sort of, you know, philosophical types. He's probably got lots of labels to his name. If I look on the back, you can see things like philosophe et écrivain. Okay, labels, labels. I'm determined to get stamp labels out of my life. I don't accept them for me or for anyone else. So I'm going to try, and one of my missions is to try and get people to question labels. So I'm going to say what I do. I write, but I'm not a writer. It's something I do. You decide if I'm a writer, depending on your definition. So this guy is labeled a philosopher and a writer. And there's a lot of these types at the moment, you know, tons of books like this. They're putting their life's experience into books and so on. And maybe I'll do it as well. And it's good, you know, it's one way of learning, is reading other people's experiences, particularly people who have been thoughtful and reflect back on what's happened to them. So he's interesting because he's apparently a guy who's he's sort of a meditation guru. I think he's probably got loads of high level meditation qualifications and labels and so on, stickers on him, you know, meditation god, third level black Dan, whatever it is. And the funny thing is his first chapter is, the title of his first chapter is Cessez de méditer, don't do anything. Ne faites rien. So it's stop meditating, don't do anything. Now that's good. And the whole book is based on things like that. So you've got chapter titles like stop being calm, be at peace. Stop trying to be perfect. Accept the ups and downs of life. Stop rationalizing. Just chill out and let things happen. Stop comparing yourself, just be you. So, you know, they're bordering on these sort of hippie modern ways of thinking, but you know, great, because I do tend to agree with them. And it's nice coming from a meditation guru who says in his first chapter, stop meditating, just don't do anything. There's a thing about meditating. I've never got into it myself, but I reckon one of the reasons for that is because it seems too much like a thing. And there's rules, and you can buy courses and CDs on it, and you can get one free life-changing meditation if you just give us your email, and you know, all this sort of stuff. It's just another product, whereas in fact meditation isn't really that. I mean, meditation is, of course, anything I say is just what I think, you know. It doesn't mean that's what it is, but I say what I think because I don't have a choice. There's no point saying what anyone else thinks. So I think meditation seems to be, well, let me put it this way. A lot of people seem to think that meditation is about not thinking about anything. That's why you're supposed to focus on your breath, because that's about as close to not thinking about anything as you can get. But what ends up happening is that they focus so much on not thinking about anything that they're almost literally going, don't think about anything, don't think about anything, I must not think about anything, I must not think about anything. And they're getting really stressed about not thinking about anything. And they're actually thinking very hard about not thinking about anything, which kind of isn't the point. Another way of looking at meditation, which is not thinking about anything, or just focusing on your breathing, is just being calm and letting thoughts come and go. In the sort of maybe traditional Western sense, meditate, you think about something. That may be getting one of the ways certain types of meditation are seen in the Eastern world. You know, literally, have an open mind, just sit there, let thoughts come and go. It's no big deal. If they come, they come. If they go, they go. But don't force yourself to do anything, because that's where the danger comes. That's where the really, you get start getting far away from any sort of real meditation, is when you're so stressed out that you're supposed to be meditating in a certain way. So So anyway, that's an interesting book. If it's translated into English, it might be worth getting hold of. You know, Leave Yourself the Hell Alone. And it's a small book, you see, and often the small ones are actually full of absolute gems because it's condensed. It's not a load of blah blah. It's not 300 pages. It's it's about 150 pages, and that's often a good sign that the person has each chapter has a really nice, profound message. But he's not going to take 40 pages to tell you about it. And almost the answer to the chapter is in the title. But of course, it'll be fun looking into that. And also, there's a quote that goes with it. Okay, so let me see what it says. Let me see if I can read you a quote for the first one. So the first chapter, stop meditating, don't do anything. The quote is: Ne demande jamais ton chemin à celui qui le connaît. Tu risquerais de ne pas pouvoir t'égarer. So this is a rabbi that said this, Rabbi Naaman de Bratslav, translated. Never ask your way from someone who knows it. The danger is that you won't be able to lose yourself, which is cool, because that lose yourself, in other words, discover new things. I like it. Now we're moving towards the end. We're in the last 10 minutes here. And what else have I got in store for us? The last thing is, let me share this with you again. The last thing I'm going to show you is this number five here, and it's called The Labels We Love. It's in the Quirks and Curios section. In other words, I don't really know what I'm going to talk about, but it's just something that happened to me during the week that I'll share. So there I was chatting with someone who wanted to see me. But it wasn't a consultation, you know, it wasn't paying. It was just a conversation, getting to know a fellow person in the town who meets up with people and helps them with stuff. So this person was in French, it's a graphotherapeute. So someone who helps people who have problems with writing. And we were chatting, and she thought that maybe one or two of her clients, because if a kid's got problems with writing, there may be other problems behind it. That's the thing, you see. Because it's very seldom that someone has a very clear physical problem which isn't indicative of some deeper lying thing or other. And the deeper lying things are where the problems may really be. And there's also the fact that, you know, she was telling me what she does with people. For example, there'll be kids will be presented because their writing is terrible. And it'll be things like, well, it can be a right mess, but it can also be little things like your H, the upstroke on the H is too high, and it's also the loop that you put in it is too big. We can sort that out for you. I mean, we're talking stuff here that is pretty far out there. You might ask yourself, isn't there more to life than changing the size of the loop on the upstroke of the H? But this is the society we're in. Even, and I must admit, at one point I said to her, and I started possibly regretting it, you know, to what extent is writing important anymore anyway? You know, writing by hand. Unfortunately, I used to love writing letters, love those, you know, getting a love letter or something in the post. When the post came, it was the most exciting moment of the day. It was scientifically proven by rating people's heart rates. You know, the clunk of the letters coming through the letterbox. Your heart rate was the fastest all day in a normal day. Anyway, we kind of joked about that, and I tried hard quickly after that to reinstall her sense of her entire life and reconversion into a graphologist and all the rest of it. Anyway, the point of this is, at one point, we were talking about a girl that she sees, and she was wondering if she could come and see me. This girl, because maybe, you know, she wanted to talk about to someone else about certain underlying things. And this little girl's mother thought that her girl was a fine, wonderful, bubbly little girl. She was great at home. This girl was great with the graphotherapeut, the writing therapist person. But the mother got a message from the school girl's teacher at school saying, "What's wrong with Zoe?" And the mother didn't know what was wrong with Zoe. Didn't know anything was wrong with Zoe. And that she said, the teacher said, yes, I feel compelled to tell you. She's very reserved. Sometimes she cries. She doesn't play with the other kids. She's almost seems depressed. She wants to play with the adults during the break time, not her friends. She hasn't got any friends. This was news to the mother. So I ended up thinking that it would be more useful for the mother to come and talk with me than the little girl. And besides, you know, kids who have so-called problems, they get shunted around all these specialists. And before you know it, just sending her to yet another specialist is going to, in French you say, enfoncer le clou, you know, drive the nail even harder into her little head that there's something wrong with her, as defined by adults. So I thought the mother might be more interesting for her to come along and have a chat than her daughter. But then that's not even that what I wanted to say. What I wanted to say was, at some point, this writing specialist said to me, well, you know, I've made loads of mistakes as a mother as well. And we weren't in consultation. I wasn't coaching her. And I just said, I just stopped her right there. And then I said, whoa, hang on a second. What's your definition of a mistake? Who told you that you've made lots of mistakes with your kids as a mother already? And do you really believe that? And then I, you know, we had a discussion and I reminded her that, you know, kids don't come with an instruction manual. You can read all the books that you like on being a great parent, but there isn't one single book on being a great parent with your kid. It doesn't exist. It can't exist. And you could even write a book about all your experiences with your kid, but it wouldn't be any help to other people in relation to their kid. It could give them some ideas. It could be interesting. They could feel not alone. But fundamentally, you're a parent for the first time. When you have your first kid, no one has been a parent to that kid before. And when you have your second kid, no one has been a parent to those two kids before you. It's virgin territory, and you've got to work it out on your own. And this lady, she'd attached some sort of badge to herself, some sort of, you know, label saying, I am a mother who has made lots of mistakes with my kids. Well, you know, what sort of mistakes do you, it's the equivalent of saying, I made a huge number of mistakes as I was learning to walk. Really? You don't say that though, do you? you know, it's accepted that you fall over. Or ride a bike, it's accepted that you fall over. That's how you learn how not to do it. But as a mother, she comes out with this subconsciously, you know, it just came out. It's maybe, you know, saying I've made lots of mistakes with my own kids. It's a way of showing that you're the same as somebody else you're talking to who seems to think that they've made a mistake with their kids. Maybe it's automatic. Maybe you really do think you're a bad mother. I don't know, but it's just, it doesn't help. It's not helpful having this way of thinking. So I did try to sow the seeds in her mind by questioning this expression. I've made loads of mistakes with my kids too. I didn't tell her that she hadn't or anything like that. I just said, what's your definition of a mistake? Do you really think they're mistakes or are they just part of being a mother? I'm going to stop it there. We're on the hour, more or less. It's been a real pleasure having you here with me today, Sab. It's just been me, and it's been fun, and it's been relaxed. And next time, maybe we'll have somebody. And the light's getting very low, so that's why the image is probably getting pretty bad. I hope the sound is still okay. This has been a good practice for me anyway. And the spirit of this thing is to give everybody, including myself, a chance to chat about stuff. A whole range of things. There's a little kind of agenda, a little, you know, but it's not fixed. It can change from week to week. We'll have interactions. You can give me your points of view. I'm not imposing ideas. I'm just suggesting things to think about. And it helps me. It helps me to share, which is one of my big things, is sharing insights, and hopefully starting off insights in other people's heads, because that's what it's all about, isn't it? It's about sharing. It's a cycle. It's this cycle I said, learn, create, share, learn, create, share. There's no beginning. There's no end. You don't start anywhere and finish anywhere. It's not linked to one person. It can go back and forth. I can create and I can share with somebody else. They can then learn they create something, the sharing goes back to somebody else, and so on. It's a big cycle. So that's what I'm doing this for. There'll be times when it's far from perfect, I was going to say, which is like that woman saying she's made lots of mistakes with her kids. So you see, even I'm guilty of this way of thinking. Far from perfect, yes. Close to perfection, yes. Perfect, yes. Awful, yes. These are just words. Don't worry about them. Do your thing and share. People will enjoy you, because when people share, people like it. To be honest, people prefer it when it's not perfect. I will share things in the glory, reveling in the glory of their imperfection, because when I see people, I want to see imperfection. I don't want to see someone trembling because they know that they haven't quite got rule number 7 down pat yet. I just want to see people sharing, creating, painting, writing, opening their mouth, smiling, getting reactions, reacting to those reactions, stuttering, having moments of genius. That's what counts. And if you don't take any action, that'll never happen. Don't worry about perfection. You've just got to do things. And wonderful things will happen. That's it for this week. I'll see you next week. Same time, same place, same quality. And we'll call it a day. There will be a recording, if you look for it, on my site, infinitycoaching.biz. See you next time, folks. Bye-bye for now.